I'm Ashley Legasic.
And I'm Catherine DeClercq.
And we make up CTV's newest podcast, Life Unmasked.
We'll bring you everything you need to know about exactly how we're going to return to normal life post-pandemic.
New episodes come out every Thursday morning on iHeartRadio, and they're available on all streaming platforms later in the day.
We hope you'll tune in.
It is Toronto's biggest test yet of containing COVID in the classroom. Will it pass or will it fail? The Etobicoke school shuttered amid student-to-student spread. Good evening. This is the first wholesale dismissal of the year in Canada's largest board. It's back to online learning.
And the race to trace is on. The concern more than just coursework showing up at home. CTV's Mike Walker's live outside Silverthorne Collegiate with more. And Mike, families still don't know how long those doors will be closed.
Well, Nathan, school officials are telling parents and students it could be 10 days, but really it depends on Toronto Public Health's investigation. In the meantime, testing kits were available here for students to pick up at the school.
A steady flow of students and parents picking up COVID-19 testing kits at Silverthorne Collegiate Institute in the wake of a COVID-19 outbreak that has closed the Etobicoke High School.
We're happy that the school's closing because we were getting daily emails last week with one case, two cases, three and four.
There was just a lot of cases coming, and I think the right thing to do was just like isolate everyone.
Toronto Public Health ordering the closure last night amid a spike in cases over the long weekend. So far, 11 COVID-19 cases have been confirmed among students. Seven cases are still active. Health officials say nine of the 11 cases are the result of student-to-student transmission.
There were a number of different multi-grade activities and events both inside and outside of school, certainly represented opportunities for transmission.
Public health now encouraging the entire school community to get tested for the virus.
They're saying that if you want to get tested, especially after Thanksgiving, to alert family members if we are positive.
The way the virus spreads, and with kids, you know, it's not surprising to me.
TJ Sam dropping off a test today. He says his son is a close contact to one case and the family is now being told to isolate.
It is very frustrating. I wish, you know, this would go away one day and we just go back to our normal lives.
Yeah, okay.
It's not easy on parents and especially the kids.
Nearly 800 students forced back to the online classroom, and it's not clear for how long while public health investigates.
They want to know exactly where this may have occurred. So they're taking the time to do that. It could last up to 10 days.
It's not fun. It's hard to focus.
This is the first school in Toronto to close this academic year. The education minister insisting schools remain safe with the precautions in place.
Three to four schools in this province amid the Delta-driven fourth wave have no active cases at all.
The TDSB says approximately 75% of students at Silverthorne are vaccinated. Public health urging students and their families who are not fully vaccinated to get the shot.
Public health is working on making a mobile vaccination clinic available for the entire school community here. Those details are still being finalized. Reporting live, I'm Mike Walker. Nathan, back to you.
All right, thank you, Mike. Next to the controversy over capacity, while rules are relaxed for some, is status quo for many others.
Thousands able to pack stadiums while restaurants and gyms watch from the sidelines. So why the discrepancy? CTV's Queen's Park Bureau Chief Colin DeMello is live with more. And Colin, some in the food business say salt is being rubbed on the wounds.
Yeah, and they are feeling pretty salty about it today, Michelle. The restaurant industry was supposed to meet with the Ford government, but the minister who was supposed to meet with them did not show up. And now some in the industry say they may resort to civil disobedience if this keeps up.
Since March of 2020, the restaurant industry in parts of Ontario has been impacted by pandemic restrictions. And now, after another setback, there's talk of ignoring the law altogether.
We are now at a point where many people in our industry are talking about civil disobedience with respect to these regulations and restrictions of indoor dining.
The latest uproar comes as the Toronto Maple Leafs prepare to play in front of a full house at the Scotiabank Arena. The provincial government rewrote the COVID-19 restriction playbook on Friday, lifting capacity limits at concert venues and sporting facilities, citing the limited number of outbreaks connected with these settings.
I think we spent most of the weekend being shocked and stunned at the announcement. trying to understand how you can allow 18,000 people to sit next to one another, taking their masks off, drinking, shouting, screaming, and yet we've got capacity limits on the patio.
The Ford government quickly sought to turn down the temperature and convened a meeting between the restaurant industry and Tourism and Culture Minister Lisa McLeod. The minister never showed up, and staff claimed there was a scheduling conflict.
There's 450,000 people employed in the restaurant business in the province of Ontario. We've been the hardest hit sector. You think that would have taken a priority.
From there, the meeting quickly went off the rails as the industry failed to get answers to a number of pressing questions.
No timeline that we can go and tell all the restaurateurs in the province this is when restrictions will be lifted, or this is the benchmark in terms of case numbers or public health standards or something that we need to reach. There was nothing.
The government says when it comes to capacity, restaurants and arenas actually have the same limits.
We should be clear that those facilities don't have strict capacity limits, but they have requirements for social distancing.
But restaurants say with that 2 meters of physical distancing, they are forced to seat just half the number of diners. Without answers, the sector is left with frustration, which is why there's talk of civil disobedience.
But they've literally left us no option.
Placing more pressure on the Ford government to explain exactly how it makes its pandemic decisions.
We did reach out to Minister McLeod's office today, but nobody answered the phone. In the meantime, the restaurant industry was told two things. The Ford government is working on a plan, but they weren't given a timeline. And they were also asked not to discuss the details of the meeting with the media. Reporting live at Queen's Park, I'm Colin DeMello. Now back to you.
All right, thank you, Colin. Still ahead, flying high. The world first here in Toronto that could be a game changer for those requiring a transplant. The high-tech solution for life-saving surgeries.
Turning now to a violent and deadly scene at a busy plaza in Brampton.
Shots ringing out in an area popular with young people. One man fatally shot. CTV's Austin Delaney's live with more. Austin.
And new information just coming to light as we come to air here. Police have just identified the victim. He's 36-year-old Amonjot Baines. No clear reason why he was the victim.
The 911 call from this North Brampton Plaza came in just before 1 this morning. There had been a shooting outside a bar.
First responders, police showed up and located a male outside in the parking lot area who had suffered multiple gunshot wounds.
Today, the parking lot remained cordoned off for the investigation. The shops closed, the neighborhood in shock that a murder had happened here at this usually busy but peaceful plaza.
Usually there's a lot of cars there because of the gym. Everybody just comes usually at like 9 p.m. is the most busiest time in the gym. So that's why you see a lot of cars.
We usually come here and after we go to the Tim's, everybody's usually friendly, no violent.
At night, they gather by the coffee shop.
Mostly Tim Hortons kids hang out at night. They stay in the parking lot.
But last night, someone pulled out a gun and started firing.
I can just confirm that the victim was shot multiple times.
Just one victim, the shooter, escaping police say, under the watchful eye of many.
I would think at about 1 a.m. there's probably going to be a lot of witnesses. So I would, and the same with the homicide investigators. So they're imploring anybody that was in the area that heard or saw anything. I know, in fact, in earlier tweets, a vehicle was last seen leaving the area. However, we can't confirm that that vehicle was involved. So that's why we're needing people to come forward. We don't have any suspect information.
Today, police scoured the grass along the sidewalk by the plaza, searching for any evidence that might have been discarded by the killer fleeing the scene.
And 17 hours after the shooting, this plaza is still cordoned off for investigators, asking if anybody has any video to give them a call. Reporting live, I'm Austin Delaney.
Thank you, Austin. We started out sunny and warm. Michelle Jobin is here with a look at the current conditions, those clouds that pushed in, you know, changing our summer-like party a little bit.
A little bit, but we're still on the warmer side, Michelle. And taking a look at current temperatures around the region, we are still, for the most part, in and around the 20-degree mark with Humidex values into the mid-20s. So, even warmer than that, it's still feeling like 30 in Fort Erie, and that's sort of the trend in the Niagara region has been for the last little while. Another day of above seasonal temperatures and another night before that on the way for us. Now, we have had some active weather through the region. That's been mostly staying to the north, London, up through the Grey Bruce Peninsula, across over into the Muskoka region. A couple of lines of storms. We've had a few bit of activity down in the Niagara region as well. Just some spotty showers here and there in the GTA, but we could see some showers continuing as we get into the overnight period. We're looking at a low of 15 degrees overnight after a high of 22. I'll tell you more about your 7-day forecast soon. Back to you, Nate.
All right. Thanks, Michelle. We have an update on the alleged Leslieville prowler. There's a suspect in custody. 40-year-old Gerard Silas Purcell, arrested Saturday afternoon, is facing a number of charges, including attempt break and enter, criminal harassment, and assault. Investigators say a man allegedly targeted homes at night in the Dundas and Leslie area between May and October of this year.
In St. Catharines, police are searching for a suspect after a statue of Harriet Tubman was vandalized. 24-year-old Jesse Lone Zelenko is wanted for mischief and failing to comply with a probation order. Investigators say a man intentionally damaged a bust of Tubman outside the Salem Chapel British Methodist Episcopal Church on Sunday, adding there's no indication at this point that it was a hate-motivated crime. Tubman was a member of the Salem Chapel who helped bring African Americans to Canada via the Underground Railroad.
As we've reported, in just over 24 hours, the Maple Leafs will play in front of more than 19,000 home fans as their season gets underway.
The province easing restrictions, allowing the Leafs and Raptors to fill the arena without any capacity limits or physical distancing. CTV's Raheem Ladani joins us now with the latest on the rules for fans wanting to watch this game in person.
Yeah, absolutely, Michelle and Nathan. As you can imagine, there's a lot of excitement. The Leafs haven't played in front of a capacity home crowd in 580 days. But there's also concern over how diligent COVID safety rules are being enforced.
The Raptor tells the story. Toronto teams ready to play at home inside a full capacity arena.
I think with everybody being vaccinated now and so forth, I think it should be fine.
Too many people, not enough masks being worn. Just a recipe for disaster.
I think that's real good that we're finally getting back to some type of norm.
Not everything will be back to normal, though, when the Leafs hit the ice in their season opener tomorrow night. COVID protocols mean everyone entering the building must be fully vaccinated unless you have a medical exemption or children 11 years old and under. There are no paper tickets, only mobile. Fans are urged not to bring bags, and masks are required when not actively eating or drinking. But this scene at the Raptors preseason game last night shows some fans, including Maple Leafs players, not wearing masks.
People get carried away, and when they're all together, They do things they shouldn't be doing.
There should always be people that are there on the scene and willing to ask people to put their masks on. Some people don't like to hear it. They just want to enjoy the game.
Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment say it will be enforcing the policy.
We've taken it very seriously. We have more staff in the building who are enforcing it. So it's a combination of signs that are reminding people to keep their mask on and interactions with fans if they forget.
Monitoring, MLSE hopes will be enough to prevent any outbreaks.
Now, fans will need a 3-ply mask to get inside the arena. Those neck gaiter masks, which you pull up over your face like a turtleneck, those are not allowed, and MLSE says you will be turned away. Reporting live, I'm Raheem Ladani. Nathan, back to you.
All right, thanks, Raheem. And our online team has a complete breakdown of what sports fans need to know if you're planning a trip to Scotiabank Arena. That's at ctvnewstoronto.ca.
And outside Scotiabank Arena, we have an update on a story we first mentioned at noon. On Legends Row, the stick of the statue of former Captain Matt Sundin should be holding is not there. Originally, there were concerns the item was missing. MLSE now says the stick is undergoing maintenance, and that is why it's not there.
We're getting 2 days' worth of figures from the province showing where Ontario stands in its fight against COVID-19. 458 new cases of the virus were logged Monday, with 390 new cases reported today. That brings the province's 7-day average to 524. Ontario's positivity rate is sitting at 1.9%.
More than 1,000 cases are now considered resolved. Again, that is over the span of 2 days, raising that total to more than 578,000 over the course of the pandemic. Two more deaths are linked to the virus, meaning 9,792 lives have been lost to COVID-19 here in Ontario.
When it comes to strictly today's numbers, here's the regional breakdown. The city of Toronto has 66 new cases, with 65 in York Region and 62 in Peel. There are 21 new cases in Hamilton, with 13 in Niagara, 11 in Halton, and 9 in Durham region.
Across the province, more than 87% of eligible people have now received at least one dose of a COVID-19 vaccine. And more than 82.3% of eligible people are considered fully vaccinated. That represents more than 10.7 million people in Ontario.
In Quebec, unvaccinated nurses will not only be suspended without pay, but their licenses will also be suspended. The move takes effect on Friday. The province's health minister had urged various professional orders of the healthcare workers to suspend the licenses of those who have not been vaccinated. Quebec's Order of Nurses says more than 4,300 of its members have not been double-dosed. The status of another 5,700 is yet to be verified.
New Brunswick has its highest number of COVID-19 cases since the pandemic began. There were 1,037 active cases as of yesterday. Hospitals in the province are moving to a red alert level. That means the postponement of some non-urgent procedures. And staff are being shifted to maintain emergency services and intensive care units. There is also a temporary cancellation of visits to all hospitals.
Major General Danny Fortin has failed in his legal bid to be reinstated as head of Canada's COVID-19 vaccine distribution. A federal judge turned down his request today. Justice Anne-Marie McDonald says Fortin should have taken his complaint to the military's grievance system before using the courts. But the senior officer's legal team has argued that system can't quash a decision made outside of the military chain of command. Fortin says he was removed from his job by the Trudeau government last May for political reasons. It happened days before a sexual misconduct allegation against Fortin, which dates back to 1988, was sent to Quebec's prosecution service. He has maintained his innocence.
The G20 is warning of a humanitarian catastrophe in Afghanistan. A summit was held today focusing on the crisis in the country that's now being run by the Taliban. The European Union pledged more than $1 billion for the Afghan people. The group of 20 nations also demanded the Taliban allow humanitarian access and keep the Kabul airport and the borders open. Afghanistan is on the verge of economic collapse.
A Wyoming coroner says Gabby Petito was strangled. The body of the 22-year-old cross-country traveler was found September 19th near a camping area in the northern part of the state. The coroner says Petito died 3 to 4 weeks before she was found. It's unclear if there may be additional charges against her boyfriend. Brian Laundrie is considered a person of interest in her disappearance and remains unaccounted for.
In the Canary Islands, an additional 700 residents were ordered to abandon their homes today. Red-hot lava is advancing towards their neighborhood as a volcano continues to erupt on La Palma. There were also more than 60 seismic movements today, the strongest measuring 4.1. The airport on the Spanish island remains open, but 11 flights were canceled and others were delayed. A bit of good news, though, a lockdown ordered because of a cloud of smoke over two villages has been lifted.
The Queen used a cane at a major public event for the first time today. Princess Anne handed her mother a walking stick before they stepped out of a limousine for a service in central London. They were at Westminster Abbey to mark the centenary of the Royal British Legion. The service highlighted the work of the organization, founded in 1921, to care for service members and their families after the First World War. The 95-year-old monarch previously used walking aids following a medical procedure in 2003. It was a brief flight in the middle of the night and is being called a world first.
A drone successfully flew a box containing a pair of lungs for transplant between two Toronto hospitals. CTV's Avis Favreau has the details.
There were 53 practice runs, sending a drone from the roof of Toronto Western Hospital to the transplant centre 5 minutes away. It let teams prepare for the real deal. When 2 weeks ago the drone made its first official flight, carrying a box containing a set of healthy lungs.
Can you see it?
To transplant surgeons at Toronto General Hospital.
Oh my gosh, wow, that's so cool.
Well, that moment was breathing a sigh of relief because, we'd done it. You know, and it landed safely and everything was good.
It's the first double lung transplant using drone delivery. More proof that it can be done, says the Quebec company behind the technology.
It's a first of in the world, and it's a life you're carrying in the air in a fully automated concept of operation. So
you got to have some courage. So you need to really focus 100% on that super critical first long drone flight.
The drone is electrically powered and was designed to carry up to 6 kilograms while holding fragile lungs, which need to be kept cooled. And the recipient, fittingly, is an engineer who dabbled in drones himself.
I was thrilled. I thought, that's amazing, advancing technology. They asked me if I wanted to participate, and I said, absolutely.
When I saw the video of the drone, I was like seeing our life beginning again.
There's an international race underway to use drones for medical transfers to boost speed and lower the cost.
The routine right now is we use a Learjet to transport a lung, which weighs 2 kilograms, okay? That's like a $20,000 flight and a lot of jet fuel.
And the goal is to expand organ transfers across the continent, saving lives with some high-flying technology. Avis Favreau, CTV News, Toronto.
Still ahead, into the darkness to better understand blindness. Have you delayed your eye care during the pandemic? Why experts believe it's contributing to vision loss.
And I'm Pat Foran. Coming up on Consumer Alert, more than 300 flights were canceled in the U.S. yesterday, and Canadian passengers say flights are also being canceled here. Sometimes you're told only hours or even minutes before you're supposed to leave. If that happens, what are your rights? I'll have my report. That's just ahead.
Well, our overnight lows continue to trend well above seasonal. In fact, overnight tonight, mostly in the mid-teens to upper teens throughout the region with a low of 15 degrees through the overnight. And there's still a chance of seeing some showers. They'll be spotty at best in the GTA. Checking in with what we've experienced this month in terms of rainfall so far, we've had 36 millimeters. Our monthly average for October is usually 74.5 millimeters of rain. A couple of unsettled days on the way where we'll see just very light showers. But as we get into Friday and Saturday, we're looking at somewhere in the range of 20 to 30 millimeters of rain possible starting up Friday night through the weekend. I'll have more details and your full 7-day forecast coming up soon.
It was a frustrating weekend for anyone flying Southwest Airlines in the U.S. More than 300 flights were canceled and more than 1,000 were delayed.
Last-minute cancellations have also been happening here in Canada, creating havoc for many passengers and their travel plans. Pat Foran has the story on Consumer Alert tonight. Pat.
Thanks, Michelle and Nathan. We've been hearing from viewers over the past month about flights being canceled with short notice. It's not exactly clear why the cancellations are taking place, but it's causing major hassles for travelers who have to make other plans fast.
So this was just the most devastating news.
Carol Everett of Pickering and her family planned a special trip to British Columbia in August. Her husband, Martin, died last year, and it was his wish to have his ashes returned to the West Coast. Hours before their WestJet flight was to leave, it was canceled.
They didn't say it was because of COVID. They didn't say the plane didn't arrive. They didn't say anything. They just, sorry, there's nothing we can do.
They were told they could go on another flight the following day in the evening, but instead they paid $3,600 for 3 tickets to fly with Air Canada. Vanessa Stokes Archer of Milton flew to Halifax with her mother and twins and was to be joined by her husband. When he went to board his flight with Flair Airlines, it was canceled while he was at the airport.
His flight was at 12:40. We were told it was delayed by half an hour. And then 20 minutes before that new departure time, they said the flight was canceled.
With no other Flair flight available for days, he had to buy a ticket with another airline for $600.
They offered no way to get him there and no compensation to be able to get him there in some way.
Gabor Lukacs with Air Passenger Rights says flights are being canceled because planes aren't full or there are staffing shortages.
The airlines have been over-promising to the public. They have been selling tickets on flights for which they don't really have the crew to operate. And as a result, they are canceling flights.
Lukacs says when flights are canceled, passengers deserve compensation, but he says many airlines don't want to pay it.
The laws are there, but the laws are not being enforced, not being followed.
CTV News reached out to WestJet and Flair to ask why their flights were canceled, but we did not receive a response back.
And if your flight is canceled in Canada, you could be eligible for up to $1,000. You're advised to take down as much information as possible, including added expenses, and then approach the airline for compensation. On your side, I'm Pat Foran.
If you have a consumer story idea, email us at alert@ctv.ca.
More Toronto speeders caught on camera. The city is releasing statistics on tickets from the summer months. There are 50 speed enforcement cameras in Toronto. In July and August, 36,700 tickets were issued after the automated devices caught people speeding. In July, the most tickets, 2,645, were at Victoria Park Avenue near Tiago Avenue. There were more than 1,200 repeat offenders. In August, the camera at Greenwood captured 2,673 speeders, and there were 764 repeat offenders. The cameras are located near schools in community safety zones.
All right, to the forecast, I know that there's rain coming, but it's hard to complain when we're so high above seasonal.
I know it feels, we're talking about July and August, it felt like it over the long weekend at times. And today, I mean, I know that the weather's shifting, but it's quite nice.
Yes, and you know, what's also characterized this whole warmer stretch of it feeling like summer is we've had humidity as well to deal with. In fact, today's Humidex was actually a record for this day of October 12th. So feeling, I think, about 26.4 with the humidity. So something to think about. It is changing, though, and we'll talk about that. Weather is brought to you by Trane, the most reliable heating and cooling brand. It's hard to stop a train. So, yes, temperatures are the story, but also precipitation as we get into the next little while. We'll take a look at that. But here's how we're doing around the region right now. It's 20 degrees, feeling like 25 in Kingston, 21, feeling like 26 in Toronto, 18, feeling like 23 in North Bay. And we've had Humidex values reaching around the 30 mark for areas like southwestern Ontario and in the Niagara region as well. Now, we have the risk of seeing some showers up until about midnight. I don't think we'll really get much in terms of thunderstorm activity, but there has been a low risk here in the GTA. And then we'll get mostly cloudy conditions and 15 as the overnight low. So even more remarkable than our daytime temperatures have been our nighttime temperatures in the last little while, because normal for this time of the year is 6 degrees. So here's how we're doing right now throughout the region and what we're looking at into tomorrow. Tomorrow, 19 degrees for Kincardine, and we'll have those showers. Stratford, 20, 21 in Tillsonburg, mix of sun and cloud and some showers. Overall, more cloud cover moving in tonight and through the day tomorrow. We will see some peaks of sun. Burlington, 23, still feeling like 28, 22 in Vaughan tomorrow, and in a little bit further to the east, we'll be at 20 degrees in Halliburton, 22 in Belleville, and 22 feeling like 27 in Port Perry. So this is how we're doing right now in terms of precipitation. We've had a couple lines of storms roll through mostly north of the city. They have extended down towards the London area, up across the Grey Bruce Peninsula, and then another line that's ahead of it that's moving through the Muskoka region right now. So this has been some active weather. They've been non-severe thunderstorms, also seeing that activity in the last little while in the Niagara region. So holding on to that risk, but downtown we've just seen a few spotty showers here and there. Just taking the bigger picture, we've got this twist of low pressure, and then there's another one in behind it as well, and it continues to move through. So expect the next couple of days to be unsettled, still on the warmer side, and putting this in motion, we'll still see some sunny breaks tomorrow. It's just we're going to get these scattered showers throughout the day. It's not going to amount to a lot of rain, nor will it as we get into Thursday. A little bit more moving through later in the day on Thursday, but heavier rain is moving in for the weekend. So tomorrow, 23, of course, looking at our high, feeling like 28 in the city of Toronto, 20 on Thursday with showers. Friday, 17 degrees. So a little bit closer to seasonal, and notice we get into those single-digit lows, and there's some rain to contend with on Saturday. Back to you, Nathan.
All right. Thanks, Michelle. Also tonight, a window into one Indigenous group's fight. The documentary film, 5 years in the making, and the story continues.
On air, online, on every platform.
A story you'll only see here.
CTV News Toronto, winner of the RTDNA Award for Best Breaking News.
Another record has been broken.
Watch weeknights at 6.
It's a visual demonstration of living with blindness.
As our health reporter Pauline Chan tells us, it's also drawing attention to the dangers of skipping regular eye exams.
Guests at Au Noir this afternoon were invited to step into the darkness of vision loss. The restaurant, staffed by the visually impaired, operates in complete darkness to simulate blindness.
You just feel like there's like a layer between you and the world. And I would encourage everybody to try this to really understand, you know, what the whole impact is of blindness.
The event was held to highlight the fact that almost half of Canadians over the age of 50 have not had an eye exam in the past 18 months, and experts believe that's adding to increased vision loss.
Throughout the pandemic, many patients have delayed their eye care, their visits for ongoing care, or their visits to detect glaucoma.
Laura Feltz has been living with glaucoma for a decade.
My vision just started to become more and more out of focus, so I see like an out of focus picture. But with glaucoma, you lose your peripheral vision. And certainly my peripheral vision was shrinking.
Glaucoma can be treated with drops, lasers, or surgery, but lost vision cannot be restored, so early detection is key.
You may lose your sight in 6 months, or it can be stable for decades. It really is individualized.
And with World Sight Day approaching on October 14th, Dr. Yan has a message.
To raise awareness of blindness and the risk of blindness in Canada. And I would encourage everyone who has had any delay in their eye care because of the pandemic to go see their eye doctor.
More than a quarter of a million Canadians have chronic open-angle glaucoma, the most common form. Risk factors include age, nearsightedness, being of African descent, and family history. Pauline Chan, CTV News.
The puck drops tonight on a new NHL season, and the league says 99% of its players are fully vaccinated against COVID-19. The NHL estimates about 5 of the roughly 700 players opted not to receive a vaccine. Teams will have the right to suspend unvaccinated players without pay if they're unable to participate in hockey activities as part of coronavirus protocols. All coaches and staff are required to be fully vaccinated as well.
Meanwhile, one of the NBA's biggest names isn't being allowed to play because he's not vaccinated. Kyrie Irving won't be taking the floor for the Brooklyn Nets until he gets double vaxxed. It was thought the veteran guard might still be allowed to play on the road, but today the club made it clear that won't happen, and Irving also can't practice with his teammates. A New York City mandate says pro athletes playing for local teams must be vaccinated. Irving hasn't confirmed that he isn't.
Gordon Lightfoot is postponing a number of tour dates in Western Canada because of high COVID-19 numbers. Seven shows across Saskatchewan, Alberta, and British Columbia are affected. One has been canceled and the rest have been moved to October 2022. Lightfoot is scheduled to begin a three-night run in Toronto on November 25th to reopen the newly renovated Massey Hall.
Stars Tonight is brought to you by Lastman's Bad Boy. Who's better? Nobody.
After the break, what happened on the markets today amid soaring consumer costs and concerns about our economic recovery?
CTV Tonight. Need a break? We've got you covered with a full night of great shows. It all starts at 7 tonight, right here on CTV.
We're happy that the school's closing because we were getting daily emails last week with one case, two cases, three and four, so it didn't seem like a safe place to be.
Updating our top story, Silverthorne Collegiate Institute in Etobicoke is closed and students are turning to online learning. 11 cases of COVID-19 have been confirmed among students so far. 7 cases are still active.
We are now at a point where many people in our industry are talking about civil disobedience with respect to these regulations and restrictions of indoor dining.
The restaurant industry is not pleased about what it sees as a double standard. It must continue trying to operate under strict COVID-19 guidelines while full capacity has been restored at sporting facilities and concert venues.
Police showed up and located a male outside in the parking lot area who had suffered multiple gunshot wounds.
A man was fatally shot at a North Brampton Plaza early this morning. A suspect fled, but police think many people might have seen him, and they're asking anyone with information to come forward.
And remember to follow us on social media and keep up to date day and night through our website, ctvnewstoronto.ca. And if you have a news tip, photos, or video of breaking news, let us know.
In business, soaring prices and global supply chain disruptions continue to weigh on the markets. Greg Bonnell-Levine in Bloomberg has those details.
The cost of living is on the minds of households and investors. North American markets struggle to find direction today as inflation concerns continue to dominate. Soaring costs and shipping bottlenecks are a threat to corporate profits and the wider economic recovery. And the crush of corporate earnings due over the next several weeks could illustrate those pressures. On the home front, a new poll suggests the majority of Canadians don't want to give the Bank of Canada the flexibility to raise its 2% inflation target in the face of these soaring consumer prices. Shares of Dorel Industries doubled in value today. That on news the Quebec-based company is selling its Dorel Sports bicycle business to a Dutch firm for roughly $1 billion. Dorel says it will pay down debt and return capital to shareholders while growing its other business segments. Now, apart from the sale, Dorel acknowledged shipping pressures are hurting its ability to meet consumer demand. Shares gained 102% on the day. Shares of Aritzia came under pressure today. That after RBC downgraded the stock to the equivalent of a hold rating. Analyst Irene Nattel says while Aritzia is well-placed to sustain its sector-leading growth, the stock's current value reflects the near-term strength already. While the stock closed down some 5% today, it has more than doubled in the past 12 months. Aritzia is slated to report its quarterly results after the close tomorrow. Well, the Canadian dollar was up 8 basis points to 80.26 U.S. American benchmark oil gained 12 cents a barrel to close at 80.64. Alberta's heavy crude, Western Canadian Select, was up 56 cents, settling at 66.43 U.S. And the TSX Composite Index gained 20 points to close at 20,437, with energy and mining stocks leading the way higher. That's the latest from BNM Bloomberg. I'm Greg Bunnell.
The International Monetary Fund is predicting the Canadian economy will grow 5.7% this year, and that's down from its previous forecast of 6.3%. The IMF also predicted today global growth of nearly 5.9% this year. That's down slightly from its July prediction of 6% growth. It downgraded the outlook due to persistent supply chain disruptions in industrialized countries and deadly disparities in vaccination rates between rich and poor nations.
The Duke and Duchess of Sussex are joining a financial tech company. Ethic invests in the environmental, social, and governance-focused sector. Harry and Meghan's participation marks yet another major corporate partnership for the couple. They've signed a flurry of deals in a bid to make a living for themselves outside the royal family following a split announced last year. They became investors in Ethic earlier this year.
The lack of consistency around capacity limits in Ontario is proving controversial.
And CP24 Tonight is digging deeper this evening. We're joined by Reshmi Nair. Reshmi, you'll be hearing from frustrated restaurant owners.
Yes, Michelle, as this played out over the weekend, right? People anticipating the Leafs game tomorrow, but restaurant owners and other small business owners saying, wait a minute, what about us? So we're going to hear from those restaurant leaders. They were on a call with what they thought was going to be the minister, Lisa McLeod, but they ended up talking to other Ford government officials. They're not happy about today's conversation. We have a statement from the government. All of that's going to unfold on CP24 tonight.
And you'll also be looking at the impact of the new comic book Superman, who's coming out as bisexual.
Yes, Nathan, people pointing out that this is technically Superman's son. How many Supermans there are in the world, who knows? But we're going to talk about the impact on comic book lovers, people around the world, when they look at a hero like Superman, and now this diversity added to his portfolio. So that's coming up on our program tonight as well.
All right, thanks, Reshmi. And CP24 Tonight airs immediately following this newscast on CP24 from 7 to 9. Filmmaker Heather Hatch's documentary portrays a fight for life.
For years, she documented an Indigenous group's fight to block a now $16 billion hydroelectric mega project in BC. As Andrea Case reports, they may have lost the battle, but they're continuing to fight the war.
The fight continues. Michelle and Nathan, good evening. Yes. The film is called Wohegalo, End of the Peace. The peace is both the river in British Columbia and the life the residents are living there. It was screened at TIFF and other festivals across the country. It's about to be featured at another festival with a focus on the environment.
If you focus hard enough on forgetting, you can live through any kind of hell. Hush. Quiet now.
That's enough. After making spoken word videos and short films, Heather Hatch never dreamed her first feature film documentary would take 5 years to make. Wohegilo, end of the piece, tells the story of those fighting to stop the building of the hydroelectric dam Site C in northeastern B.C. Building it breaks Treaty 8 between the government and local indigenous people. Some First Nations have come to an agreement, ending a civil claim worth $1 billion. But residents of Prophet River and West Moberly First Nations, along with environmental overseers, stand firm, saying the 1,100-megawatt dam doesn't need to be built, adding it will flood agricultural land, sacred sites, and damage the local environment. One-time Ribble Premier Christy Clark said she only wanted to get the dam to the point of no return. Current NDP Premier John Horgan says they have reached that point. In 2014, it was budgeted at $8.3 billion. The budget has now doubled and is behind schedule.
This is the experience of most First Nations across Canada, and I just really wanted the film to take a look at why we fight, why we protest, why it seems like we're angry, but you know, it's peaceful. It's a peaceful protest.
Another feature of the film is the impact of the Kamloops Residential School. As Premier Horgan stated in 2017, Indigenous people have had over 150 years of disappointment in British Columbia. The film is the opening night presentation of the Planet in Focus Environmental Film Festival.
There will be an in-person opening night gala of Wohegilo, end of the piece, on Thursday. And there'll be a family day open on Saturday, both at Stacked Market at Bathurst and Front. Now, the rest of the festival, like so many others, will be virtual. It runs from October 14th to the 24th. They've submitted the film to the Vancouver Film Festival, but it has been declined. Reporting live, I'm Andrea Case. Nathan, I'll send it back to you.
All right. Thanks, Andrea. Just ahead, the transport won't be long now. Captain Kirk himself, William Shatner, prepares for tomorrow's real-life trek to space.
Tonight, consequences kick in for the unvaccinated.
It's what's best for the organization at this point in time.
NBA All-Star Kyrie Irving suspended for refusing to follow the COVID rules. Later on CTV National News.
And a reminder, the CTV News at 6 podcast is available as a download every weeknight. And you can also listen to the newscast live on News Talk 1010.
Get Toronto's top stories, breaking news alerts, and watch live. Download the CTV News app.
William Shatner is making final preparations to be beamed up.
The Canadian-born actor makes his first real-life space flight tomorrow.
I'm going up into space. I don't know how many people can say that. It's life-changing in its way. Not because of the aerial adventure, but because of the people I'm meeting.
Shatner will enter the final frontier on a flight lasting 10 minutes or so with three other civilians. The fully automated journey will take them no higher than about 106 kilometers. The capsule will then parachute back to the desert floor, not far from where it took off. The flight was delayed by a day due to weather. A Twitter user asked Shatner whether he will post from space. Captain Kirk said he can't bring his phone, but has, quote, prearranged a little something. We'll have to see. Well, from space to the street, it's all aboard the Eglinton Crosstown LRT.
Our first ride on the pricey project, decades in the making, but is the progress below ground on track? CTV's Beth McDonnell reports.
10 years of construction and the Eglinton Crosstown LRT is finally moving. On the street and underground.
Okay, you can board the train.
This tour includes some of the first people to see the new 19-kilometer line in action, a chance to show it off to the public.
Yeah, we had a lot of people waving at us, photographs. You see people stopping. We even have cars pulling over and waving. Our drivers are told to, you know, acknowledge them, sound the horn.
The train itself is the newest generation of the same streetcars Torontonians already know, but with upgrades. Doors on both sides, an integrated communication system with the subway line and GO Transit in the event of issues, and it can travel up to 80 kilometers an hour underground. Right now, teams are testing trains at 15 kilometers an hour. The wait for everyone to take a ride still a ways off.
Metrolinx anticipates welcoming passengers to ride the LRT in the later part of 2022, eventually transporting 15,000 people east and west across Eglinton every day.
The agency says of the 25 stops, 15 are underground and close to a dozen of those are 90% complete. This is a look at the walls and corridors of the Science Center station at Don Mills in Eglinton. The feeling before boarding, a source of pride for those who made it a reality.
The full platform, it looks very nice. And whenever you see the train coming and you see the full surroundings, you see, oh, this is wonderful.
When passengers do travel, they'll notice other differences. Presto machines will be at stations, not on trains, and they'll see a lot more green on their trip. 60% of the track bed from Brentcliffe to Kennedy will have grass, not concrete. Each train able to transport about 340 people at a time.
It's a train. So the streetcars on King and Queen and everywhere else, a travel is a single car. There'll be two for the crosstown.
The real benefit of the LRT will be evident to the new riders, and that is how quickly they'll be able to traverse from one side of Eglinton to another side of Eglinton. So from Don Mills, for example, down to Young would take about 10 minutes.
A long-awaited faster trip edging closer to the end of the line. Beth McDonnell, CTV News.
All right, so if you're commuting tonight, what can you expect, Michelle?
Well, we still do have a widespread risk of seeing some showers. However, the thunderstorm activity so far has mostly given us a miss. Seeing some active weather in the Niagara region, down towards perhaps Simcoe, Norfolk counties, and then also up in and around the Parry Sound area, crossing over the Bruce Peninsula as well. So we do have that risk of showers probably until about midnight tonight, and then we're overcast for the most part. We have a low of 15 degrees in the overnight, and then a few peaks of sun during the day tomorrow. Chance of seeing some showers, but we'll have a high of 23 degrees. It's going to feel probably like about 28 with the Humidex. And if we reach that, it'll actually be a record for Humidex for October 13th. For Thursday, 20 degrees and showers, Friday, sunshine and 17. And we start to get these more seasonal temperatures towards the end of the week, including overnight lows. Back to you, Michelle.
Thank you. And be sure to join Zarada Allman later tonight for CTV News at 11:30.
You can also stay up to date by going to our website. And a reminder, CP24 tonight begins momentarily on CP24.
For Michelle Jobin and all of us here at CTV News, have a great night.